This episode of the Startup Slingshot is brought to you by Sunag Consulting. Sunag Consulting offers services to help your business compete and succeed in today's marketplace, including website design and online marketing. You can check them out at sunagconsulting.com or contact them by phone at 615-669-3269. For all the loyal TSS viewers out there, Sunag Consulting has put together a PDF of 20 things you can do today to improve your Facebook fan page. To snag a copy, click the Sunag logo to the right of the video. Now onto the show. My name is William Griggs, founder of the Startup Slingshot, a resource that delivers guidance from experienced entrepreneurs and business experts on how to dream, launch, and grow your business. Have you ever wondered how to go about launching your business? Today's guest is Tasha Ross. Tasha is the co-owner of Fiddle Cakes, a bakery cafe concept she opened with a partner over 2 years ago. Today I'm going to talk with Tasha about the tactics she used to launch both her first and second location. Enjoy. All right, Tasha, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell our viewers a little bit about your background.
So I am originally from California, moved to Nashville to attend grad school and finished in 08 from the Owen School. I worked with a startup technology firm here in Nashville for just under a year and in trying to figure out what my next move was. Sat down to coffee with someone who suggested I look into purchasing a distressed business. And that example was a bakery. So it was just the first thing that got me excited in a long time. So it's kind of how it got me to where I am today. Before grad school, I spent my career in sales. So that is my background.
Gotcha. So what? Tell us a little bit more about the business that you purchased and now are running. Where are you with it today?
We had actually looked at two businesses and walked away. So this is actually a business that was our brainchild, if you will. So where are we today? We just celebrated 2 years, about 2 years in business. We have two locations currently. One of the locations is kind of the main location where everything happens. So all of our catering comes out of there. All of the baking happens there. We're a full service bakery, cafe, coffee house. So both locations are full service coffee house with all the espresso drinks. They also serve the same menu, which is sandwiches, soups, paninis, salads. And then we have our catering menu, which I mentioned to you, where we do lunch, offer lunch, breakfast, small bites, and any kind of desserts. We do any kind of custom orders related to baking. So cookies, we offer custom cakes, wedding cakes, carved cakes. And then we also have our wholesale accounts where we offer baked goods.
Gotcha, gotcha. So kind of understand where you are now, and we kind of want to take a step back and kind of go back to the beginning and talk about what kind of strategies you specifically used to launch Fiddle Cakes. So before you opened, you talked about using social media to kind of create some hype. What are some of the stuff that you did using social media even before you opened your doors?
Before we opened, one of the things that was important to us was to create that buzz. And we figured the best way to do that was to have a following. So we created a Facebook page and we posted big things that were happening along the way. So kind of initially, you know, coming soon and who we were, what our vision was. And then we posted pictures of the construction. So we found an older house on 8th Avenue, and we needed to do some construction. And so we posted before pictures, we posted during construction. I think we posted pictures with all the people that we worked with. And so it became kind of fun, and we introduced, you know, invited all of our friends to join the Facebook page, and that ultimately grew. And then as we got closer to opening, we were able to throw out, you know, where we were, how close we were, when we would be opening our doors, all of that good stuff.
Gotcha. So when you were actually doing the construction, did you actually have a Fiddle Cake sign out in front to let people know, like, coming soon?
We did have a coming soon sign. And then as soon as we could, we had our sign erected. Unfortunately, it wasn't nearly as long before, just because the sign ended up taking a little bit longer than expected, but we did have a coming soon sign. The other thing that we did was we were able to get online to places like, I think, City Search and Yelp, and put our information on there. So it was, you know, we started building our web presence, in essence.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. It seems like there's a handful of restaurants around Nashville specifically that I've seen that are being built, but you don't know what's going to go in them. They don't have a coming soon sign. They don't actually have what's coming. So you're kind of waiting, but I feel like it's a missed opportunity to kind of tell the neighborhood or what have you what's coming. So that's an interesting take home point. What else in terms of building buzz using social media before you launched did you all do?
A lot of it was, what we would be having and who we would be. So, it's one thing to have a coming soon sign, which is wonderful, but if you have a new name, for instance, like Fiddle Cakes, and you have no idea what that means, talking about what we were going to offer, who we were, and what we were. So for us, a big part of that was we were going to offer gluten-free and vegan options. And so that was important to get that point across. And then talk about, we were going to offer coffee and we would have sandwiches. So the things that we initially were planning to do, so people knew, all right, well, there's a new business coming in. This is the name of it. And this is what they were going to offer. And for us, it was really important to talk about the gluten-free because that's a whole market that, it's not just. There's definitely a large group of people that are interested in gluten-free, but you have to specifically get to those people. And so this was our way of being able to do that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So you had your differentiating point, something that sets you apart from other bakeries or coffee shops, and then you actually use that before you even launch to start targeting those types of people. Maybe it's different groups of people that only eat gluten-free, or maybe magazines, or you could think of it, any examples of ways to target people like that would like your specific product. What about when you launched? You always talk about something new is always exciting and take advantage of being new. What does that actually mean?
Well, it's really exciting when something is new, especially in the restaurant industry. Everyone wants to go check it out and see what it's all about and, if it's good because people get excited about new restaurants, especially if they're in their backyard, right? It's great when you can walk to a place or when you're just going down the street. So having that grand opening sign or now open is a big deal. And I would say that we probably left, we had lawn signs or little signs that you stick around. And we had those out saying grand opening for quite a while, really, I think until the weather kind of made them non-existent. And that was great for us just because it was something else that caught your eye. We had our open sign and we had our sign, but having that sign, you're more likely, I think people are more likely to stop if they feel like it's new. If it's been there forever, you'll drive right by. But if something like grand opening or now open catches your eye, you want to check it out and you have that curiosity. So that was really helpful. The other things that we did is we did some print advertising and again, we advertised the now open. And I think the first year was all about building awareness. And if there was some little hook that you could use to create that excitement, or I mean, it's really a matter of just giving somebody a reason to stop in.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. It seems like that's just an interesting point of having the signs open, and an interesting point of what you said that if you even live in a town for, let's say, 2 years and you don't go to some of the restaurants, you're probably thinking, why haven't I been to that restaurant? None of my friends go to that restaurant, so I'm probably not going to go to that restaurant. Whereas if it's a new business and you throw a now open sign up there, piques people's interest and they might venture in and then talk about their experience because, again, it's new. So if you can tie in the new and now open, like you're saying, as being exciting with a quality experience, then you're in much better position than just an average experience, because then people will start talking about you. Were there any other initiatives that you did right when you launched? You talked about the signs and some of the social media stuff and the print advertising. Was there any what are any other things that you did when you first launched?
A lot of it was press when we first launched because press gives you credibility and you're not paying for it. So obviously it's great because it's free. It provides a level of credibility that no advertising can, and generally will provide a second perspective, a food critic, something along those lines. So, for instance, you know, it's great when you can get a food critic in. So obviously the way to do that is not to pick up the phone and say, hey, will you come review my business? Because that doesn't work like that. But it's sending a press release to all of the news channels, TV channels, the local, you know, business journal, the local newspapers, anyone that may write information, anybody that blogs, even letting bloggers know, hey, I've got a new restaurant that's open, you know, you may want to stop by and try it. So some of the things that we did is I spent some time researching food bloggers and I emailed them. I sent press releases, like I said, to all the news channels, to the papers, anybody that might be interested. And we were really lucky. We had some wonderful press. We were reviewed in the first year by the Nashville Scene, the Tennessean. We had, you know, wonderful blogs on a number of the, and that was a lot of the ways that we got our name out, not just, you know, about who we were, but gluten-free bloggers would pick us up. And so we were able to get into the network. And through the press, through the bloggers, we met, you know, the Celiacs Brew Association group here in Nashville. And so we were able to get involved with them and attend some of their meetings. And so not just for us to create awareness, but it was also a wonderful way for us to be more involved in the community and figure out who we needed to know.
Gotcha. So it seems like you like to say you went after press or some PR related coverage because it's free. Provides credibility. It's an outside perspective, so it's not just an advertisement. It's obviously biased. And then you started off, you did some press releases to a bunch of media outlets, and then you reached out to bloggers. And it seems like you kind of reached out to two types of people. You kind of reach out to industry people, maybe the foodies, and you also reach out to the more general people that, or the more general outlets, maybe the Nashville Post, the Nashville Scene. What can you tell us in terms of specifics on, you know, your story or why you think someone at, let's say, the Tennessean would actually cover you?
Well, I think, again, back to that being new. When somebody's new, when a new restaurant is around, that's exciting. And especially for us, it was, you know, and you're still hanging around, it's the down economy. So people, it's a great story. You know, a new business in a down economy, or a business that's been around for a year or 2 years in a down economy. I think we still get that, you know, we're considered, obviously we started in the down economy. And so, you know, why did you want to start? What was the big deal? And then we opened the second location. And so that buzz was a big deal for us. And that was, I think, a big reason why people came to us. I think the other thing that we saw a lot was the gluten-free. People love the fact that we did, and we offered gluten-free. You know, it was fairly new. We were one of the first. And it was a big deal because there wasn't a whole lot in this area.
Gotcha. Makes a lot of sense. So it seems like if you're a business owner out there, you could take away that, you know, if you're about to launch, you need to take advantage of this moment of being new, but also tie it in, even if you're not about to launch, to maybe a bigger theme. So you could tie yours in specifically to the down economy and the fact that tons of businesses are closing, but you're launching. And so it's actually tied into a much bigger theme that's going on. And then you also differentiated yourself, like you're saying, your service offerings with gluten-free and vegan food offerings that caught people's attention because not many restaurants were doing it, and not many restaurants are doing it today either. So what about, you know, you talk about taking advantage of stuff that's free or taking advantage of the free. What are some of the ways that you were able to do that when you first launched?
I think that goes back to online, the online presence. I mean, one, just, you know, getting that press. And so, for instance, I remember the Tennessean, they did an initial article on our baker and introduced our baker. There was then an article on us as business owners opening the bakery, and then there was a food article. So there were some articles back to back, and we would, as soon as those came out, we posted those on Facebook, we posted those on Twitter, and then we ultimately put them on our website so that you could see that press. One, that you could see that we were a credible source, we had been written up, but then also we wanted as many people to see it as possible. And so that was a big deal for us. So not just having it come through and letting people see it, but pushing it out to as many sources as we could. And then, of course, just spending a great deal of time online. So our daily posts on Facebook and Twitter, letting people know, you know, what our daily specials are, what soups of the day. Because any way that you can get in front of people and let people know what's new, what's different, that's exciting. So if you came in yesterday, why should you come back today? Or why should you come back next week? What are the big deals? What's exciting? And so we're constantly posting what's new, what's going on, what we're offering, what changes we're making to let people know and keep people part of the story, part of the family. So anytime we, you know, play with a new gluten-free flour mix, or we're introduce a new product, or we're thinking about changing some things up, we always reach out to our fans on Facebook and our followers on Twitter to find out, you know, what do they think? Because you have that as an audience, and people are completely open to talking to you and giving you ideas and sharing what they think.
Gotcha. So it started off with taking advantage of new and free, and then we talked a little bit about social media and online presence. We talked about getting press, and that the goal here is to generate awareness. So are there any other things you could talk about in terms of generating awareness and that what you did or what you wish you had done when you first started?
If I look back and think about some of the things that I wish I would have done, you know, I wish I would have gotten into wholesale a little bit earlier. And mainly that was just to have one more channel that our products were offered than the people that could learn about us. Because we did some wonderful things with public awareness. So as far as kind of from a strategy, I wish I would have looked at that. I also wish I would have focused a little bit more on, ultimately, my goal is to get into gluten-free food distribution. So if that's my ultimate goal, then I would make sure that everything that I'm doing focuses on getting to that particular strategy, or everything that I did was aligned with that vision and that goal. But from a social media aspect, or from a marketing standpoint, I should say, when we opened the second location, we held a ribbon cutting ceremony, and we did a grand opening party with the general public. So in the first year, we had a friends and family party, but the grand opening party with a ribbon cutting, we invited the National Chamber of Commerce, Mayor Carl Dean was in attendance, and then Congressman Jim Cooper was in attendance. And that particular party gained a great deal of press. One of the news channels, I believe News Channel 2, showed up to do a follow-up story on the opening of a second location. And that was wonderful because the people that showed up, we invited the people in the area, the 10th Avenue District, which was wonderful. So we met some new faces, and we were able to introduce ourselves to the neighborhood. But then with, you know, having the mayor and the congressman there, it was great for us just to show, you know, people kept saying how wonderful it was. And that was very exciting. And then obviously from a marketing perspective, it was incredibly helpful.
Yeah. I guess taking one step back, how did you even know that you wanted to differentiate and go the direction of gluten-free and vegan foods?
Oh, goodness. Well, when I was in school at Owen, a friend of mine had received some money to look into that. And so when I told her what I was going to be doing, she suggested that I look into gluten-free. And then my business partner at the time was interested. She said, well, if we're going to do gluten-free, I'd also like to offer vegan options because there aren't a lot in town. So that's how we decided on that. And that was a great choice. One, because there wasn't any options. And so it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful to have a business that really does give back and offer something that isn't really offered a great deal here in town. And so that's been wonderful. And it's been something for us that does differentiate ourselves. It puts us in a niche market. And it's been a way that we don't focus solely on that. And I don't know if we ever will. I definitely, you know, would like to focus more on that as time goes on. But it's definitely something that has proved to be wonderful for us in terms of creating a name. Gotcha. And it's been something that we hang our hat on.
Gotcha. It makes a lot of sense. I think one of the things you said that was interesting there, at least in my mindset, was that you have that as your niche, as a niche market, but it's not your main focus. Because when I think Fiddlecakes, I think of the cookies and the sandwiches, but I don't think gluten-free now. But I have a friend who only eats gluten-free, and so when they think of Fiddlecakes, they think gluten-free cookies and all sorts of other stuff that they can eat. And so what was interesting is seems like you can actually cater to both parties there and provide solutions for them, but not have to be known for gluten-free or not gluten-free, depending on the circle, I guess, if that makes sense.
You know, that's kind of an interesting point that you bring up. That's actually something that we work on constantly, because so many people do think of us in a different way. And currently at this point, because of the various channels that we offer, you know, we have the coffee shop, and then, you know, we have the cafe side of things. We do wedding cakes and groom's cakes and then carved cakes. And then we offer gluten-free and vegan options. And then we have a full catering menu. In order to market all of those things, it can be interesting sometimes. And people are going to hear what they want to hear. So in some ways, it's constant reinforcement, right? And for us, a lot of that is, you know, through our social media outlets, letting people know this is everything that we do. And it's a little overwhelming. At the end of the day, people are going to remember what's pertinent to them, and that's great. But if you can give them some things, you know, to think about. So if people think, you know, okay, well, they're gluten-free. I'm not necessarily gluten-free, but then if someone, you know, if they find out a friend of theirs or a significant other is gluten-free, that is something generally that will stick and they'll repeat. And so it's just a matter for us, it's constant reinforcement.
Makes a lot of sense. Another point that you said you wanted to drive home in the pre-interview was change what isn't working, but don't stop trying. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. With marketing, I feel like there are so many outlets to try. And the one thing that you can always count on as a business owner or someone that's in business working for a business is that your phone is going to ring regularly from people that want to help you with marketing. And there are so many ways to market. It's really at some point you have to figure out what works for you, and you have to find your budget and determine that and stick to it, because otherwise it really can get out of hand. For us, we've been very specific with, we have a social media strategy, this is what we're driving home. And, you know, these are the other forms of marketing that we're doing this year, whether it's providing donations at a charity event or serving food at, you know, offering food at some local event that's going on. But we're very specific about that. However, with that being said, I am constantly in conversation, and depending upon who's on the phone that's trying to sell me something, I always at least want to learn a little bit about it, because I want to know what is out there. Because at the point that I I'm constantly looking at what's working and what's not. And if I'm going to pay for something that's not working, then I'm going to pull it back. And if it's working, I'm going to understand why it's working, what the ROI is, and why do I believe we should continue. And I ask those questions and make sure that at the end of the day, I can answer those. Because if I'm spending money on things that aren't working, then I'm not hurting anybody but myself in the business. So how can I get the word out there in the most efficient way possible? And for me, it's gaining the best ROI, and of course spending the least amount of money so that my bottom line is greater. But it's a constant focus on what's new. And in the world of technology, there's constantly something new going on, whether it's, you know, a gift card program, I think Edo, that's attached to a credit card, or, you know, some kind of new daily deal. And before you do any of them, understanding, you know, what the big thing, there's so much crazy talk about Groupon and why it doesn't work or why it does work. But at the end of the day, you have to understand why these products work specifically for your business, because they're out there and they may be these general products that they're marketing to everybody, But everyone's business works differently, whether that means that you have a different average order or you have a different customer segment that you're trying to market to. But you have to understand that before you can bring any of these marketing products in, because they're not going to work unless you're specific with how you use them.
Gotcha. Makes a lot of sense. So think about all the different options and entertain them. But also, it seems like something that you do new business owners need to learn is the metrics, like you're saying, is, you know, testing some different new things out that might work for you, but tracking the metrics so you actually know whether or not they are working for you, which kind of ties into the next point that you talked about, which is be careful on what you spend, because it's easy to go crazy. Are there any examples that you had where, looking back, you think, why did I waste that money?
I would say in our first year, we spent a great deal of money in print advertising. Would I do it again? Honestly, I don't know. I think it was incredible for awareness and it was very helpful, but it's really hard sometimes to track, especially for a restaurant. So because you have so many people coming in each day, that even just the traditional sitting down and, you know, marking a dot when somebody comes in next to print advertising, whatever the case is, it's just difficult. And then of course, as you gain more awareness, people list off 5 different ways that you've seen them. And that goes back to, you know, you have to ask somebody 5 times before they're going to say yes. Well, similarly, you have to get in front of somebody 5 times before they're going to come in. So then it's even more difficult to track because they've seen it so many different places. Now, that's wonderful, but for us, what we realized a lot was our sign was one of the best pieces of marketing. And it was because it was so large, people saw it, and they were constantly wondering what it was. Strangely enough, as we've now been there for a few years, it's not nearly as great a marketing piece because people drive by it and they may notice it, but it's not as interesting because it's been there for a few years. So that kind of goes back to the point of being new. You know, the other thing that I wish I would have looked at, we did offer a Groupon very early on when Groupon came to Nashville. I think it was in January of 2010, maybe. And the Groupon followers were very new at that time. But one thing that I would have done differently is when I first decided to do it, I offered a 10 for 20 deal. Well, that was well over my average order and it didn't make sense for me. And in many ways, it was not an ideal situation. However, if you look at what you would normally spend on a print ad, it was kind of worth it just for awareness. And so I kind of chalk it up to that. But I have done a second Groupon where I was very specific about my average order. And that worked out very well for us. So again, it's just a matter of really understanding why you're doing certain pieces of marketing, what kind of money you're going to spend, and if it's going to be worth it.
Gotcha. So it goes back to the metrics of what you're spending versus what you project you'll get, so the return. But what about, and then a little bit of trial and error, like you say, because they can't learn everything that they're going to need to know from the Startup Slingshot. Unfortunately, they're going to have to go out and try. But what's the example you gave between the change from the first Groupon to the second Groupon?
That was all average order. It was the first time, you know, and I knew my average order. And in some ways, you have to stand your ground. You know your business better than anyone. And I learned that in some ways the hard way. Again, I chalked it up to awareness. But our first Groupon, we offered a $10 for $20 at Fiddle Cakes deal. Well, in the first Groupon, there were people that were coming in that thought, you know, people weren't aware, didn't know Groupon as well. And so we had some customers that were unhappy because they had to spend it all in one time and they were trying to spend it. Well, that wasn't great for us because they weren't going over that $20. You know, instead, they were trying to get up to that. So that was not ideal. The second time we did it, it was wonderful because most people that would bring the Groupon in were coming with 2 people unless they were specifically using it to pick up a pie or a cake or something along those lines. And most people were spending over that allotted, you know, whatever I think it was 6 for $12. So in our average order at the cafe is about $8. So it was wonderful because, you know, people were spending over the amount. So we were getting, people were happy. There weren't any concerns. People obviously at that point, it was about a year and a half later, people fully understood Groupon. So they weren't buying the Groupon with the expectation that they could come back, you know, as many times as they wanted on the same Groupon. They understood all of the fine print. So it wasn't, we didn't have any unhappy customers that we didn't have any, a lack of control over. And it was just, it ran much easier. We knew what to expect, and it seems to be good all the way around.
Nice. It makes a lot of sense, and something definitely our viewers can learn from. I guess the last point you want to hit home is talking about thinking strategically, and you give an example of don't distribute flyers if you're a high-end restaurant or accounting firm. Use your culture. What exactly do you mean there?
I think it's important to understand what is your culture and what is the atmosphere and the culture that you're trying to get across. When we first opened, I printed out these little cards and I took them around to some places and I put them on some cars. And funny enough, I actually found out yesterday that I brought somebody in and somebody has known about us since we opened. But at this point with who we are, I had somebody suggest that we put flyers on cars. And at the end of the day, that's not necessarily the image that I want to convey. Not that I'm all tied up in image, but I don't want, it's important. I mean, our stuff is very high quality. We use the highest quality of ingredients. And I don't necessarily know if a flyer is the best way to get that across. So for us, it's figuring out what is the best way to market that conveys our image the way that we want to be conveyed. Plus, how are you getting to the right people? In some ways, if you're putting flyers on everybody's door, everybody's car, you're not necessarily aware if that is the customer segment that you want to market to. So one, what is the customer segment that is right to market to in terms of what's going to get you the biggest bang for your buck? Who are the people that are ideal customers? If you go out to the general public, that's just kind of open, and you may be spending more time and more money than you need to in ways that aren't necessarily paying off. And so that's a big issue. And then really being comfortable with, are you getting to the right people? What is the specific customer segment? Because I've heard, and I've said it before, is, well, we want, everyone can be our customer. Well, yeah, in some ways that can be true, but if you really believe that, you're going to spend more time trying to get to everyone than you need to. At the end of the day, there is a group of people that are never going to come to your store or your business, and that's okay. It's that 80-20 rule, right? 80%, yeah, 20% of the people are going to, going to make up for 80% of the business.
Gotcha.
So that's what I'm trying to say. And with that being said, that statistic out there, you need to spend more time focused on those 20% or, the smaller percentage, the customer segment that is going to really be best for you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So thinking about your brand and what you're trying to convey in terms of the quality of your product, and then thinking about your target market. If you're targeting people that don't have cars, putting flyers on cars is not the right target. Not saying you are, but I'm just saying in general, if you think about, got to be more strategic and think about what you're trying to portray in terms of your brand, but then also who you're trying to target. And then going back to, you only have so many hours in the day, so you want to really niche down and focus your efforts on targeting those right people, where those people hang out, where those people are. Well, if you're targeting people that are extremely healthy, and then this works with your brand, you might go to a gym and put flyers on a car there. I'm not sure if that might work depending on what type of business you are, but even thinking about just where they are in the real world, but also online, and going from there. I guess to end, we'll give a blanket question. Is there anything else you want to share with our viewers about kind of your experience launching?
It's been a heck of a ride, and there's a lot of things that I never would have imagined, and there's, a lot of things that I was prepared for. But at the end of the day, I don't think, there's really nothing like it. I mean, it's going to keep you awake at night, but at the end of the day, it's going to provide some of the, greatest feeling, I think, in the world, because really at the end of the day, it's what you've built, it's yours. So you know, I've had a lot of fun, but definitely, you know, not without the challenges and a lot of learning. So.
Yeah, that's a good piece to end. Where can people want to, let's say, purchase a cake, a wedding cake, or maybe get a job with you all? How can they get in touch with you?
I would say the best way is to email us. And whether it's info@fiddlecakes.com is probably the best way for people to figure out, you know, where to get a cake or where to grab a job or just get in touch.
Yeah, that's perfect. So I want to encourage all our viewers out there, if they're looking to start a business and they need an idea, they can check out an interview I did with a fellow named Jim Beach. But they're already working on launching a business and need to work on branding, they could check out an interview I did with a guy named John Morgan. And we have two interviews with him, one branding 101, which will give you a baseline and base fundamentals. And then we also have more advanced versions. So check those out. Tasha, I really appreciate your time and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.